Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. These are the stories coming up on today's program. Pope Benedict appeals for an end to the fighting in the African nation of Chad and expresses his solidarity with the thousands of civilians forced to flee their homes. Earlier during his catechesis, the Pope reflects on today's Ash Wednesday that marks the beginning of Lent. Dominican Father Robert Ombres looks at the significance of the Pope's Lenten message this year that focuses on the need to give alms to the poor. And Jesuit Father Jerry O'Collins offers a reflection that explains why we are all Ash Wednesday people. And we have two reports on how Catholic organisations and individuals are putting that Lenten message into practice by helping the poor and needy. At his general audience today, Pope Benedict appealed for an end to the fighting between government and rebel forces in Chad and said he was particularly close to civilians caught up in the conflict. During his catechesis, the Pope examined the significance of today's observance of Ash Wednesday, marking the beginning of the 40-day season of Lent, with its emphasis on prayer, fasting and almsgiving. Lydia O'Kane has this report on the Pope's audience.
In questi giorni sono particolarmente vicino alle care popolazioni del Chad.
Pope Benedict made an appeal for Chad this Wednesday, urging that the weapons of violence be put down and the path of dialogue and reconciliation be taken. Rebels stormed into the Central African country's capital, N'Djamena, at the weekend before withdrawing, but the fighting left a trail of destruction in its wake, and aid agencies have been trying to deal with a looming humanitarian crisis. The Holy Father said he was very near to the people of Chad in these dark days, who are tormented by painful internal fighting, which has caused numerous deaths and the displacement of thousands of civilians in the capital. The Pope also asked people to offer their prayers and solidarity to those that are suffering, asking that they may be spared from further violence and are given the needed humanitarian assistance. Pope Benedict made the appeal during his weekly general audience, where he also marked the beginning of Lent.
Ash Wednesday marks the beginning of our annual Lenten journey of prayer and penance. In the early church, Lent was a time when catechumens prepared for baptism, accompanied by the prayers of the whole Christian community.
Speaking to the crowds of faithful in the Paul VI Hall, the Holy Father continued by saying that it is only God alone who can satisfy our deepest longing, and that the season of Lent is a moment of spiritual renewal.
The Lenten season is a privileged moment of conversion and spiritual renewal for the whole Church. The rite of the imposition of ashes is a summons to return to God, and in doing so to discover authentic freedom and joy. Jesus reminds us that only by losing our life will we truly find it. Our ultimate fulfillment is found in God alone, who satisfies our deepest longings. By taking up our cross and following the Lord, we experience redemption, inner peace, and loving solidarity with our brothers and sisters.
The Pope then returned to the theme of almsgiving during Lent, which had been a prevalent part of his Lenten message.
During Lent, in addition to prayer and fasting, the Church invites us to practice almsgiving as an expression of our desire to imitate Christ's own self-giving and his generous concern for others. As we set out once again on this journey of spiritual renewal, may Mary, Mother of the Church, guide us to fruitful celebration of Easter.
Towards the end of his audience, the Holy Father greeted all the English-speaking pilgrims present, including participants in the graduate school of the Bosse Ecumenical Institute based in Switzerland, offering them his prayerful encouragement. Among those present from the Institute was Father Ion Sauka, who spoke more about the group's trip to Rome.
This is a group from Switzerland, from the Ecumenical Institute of Bosse, which is a part of the World Council of Churches. And we are coming for the annual study trip to Rome, and to have an audience with His Holiness the Pope.
In conclusion, the Pope invoked his apostolic blessing upon the gathered faithful. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
Later in the day, as is the tradition on Ash Wednesday, Pope Benedict presided at Mass with the blessing and imposition of the ashes in the Basilica of Santa Sabina on Rome's Aventine Hill. In his 2008 Lenten message released last week, the Pope encourages Christians to give alms, saying Lent is a perfect time for helping the poor. In his letter, Pope Benedict writes that coming to the aid of the poor is a duty of justice, even prior to being an act of charity. He also reminds Christians that almsgiving must be done for God's glory and not our own. Father Robert Ombres is the Procurator General of the Dominican Order based at Santa Sabina in Rome. Tracy McClure asked him to reflect on how the Pope's appeal for almsgiving and self-sacrifice is borne out in this Lenten season and also in the liturgy.
Liturgy means many things. Part of its meaning and its power is it's a drama that we act out in very significant, striking ways. Beliefs that normally remain hidden in our lives. And Ash Wednesday, of course, is one of the most dramatic acting out of some of our beliefs. The ashes, the words of a priest in saying, remember you are dust, to dust you will return, make us see in a literal way, make us put us in touch, literally, with the meaning of a feast and of our lives, which are fragile, mortal, but under grace can be redeemed and preserved forever. And what we do on Ash Wednesday in this dramatic way of receiving the ashes, of begging forgiveness and of beginning acts of penance, we act out most intensely for one day what we'll then carry out for 40 days and of course all the year round. But we need strong reminders every year of what ought to be our normal Christian way of life. Traditionally there have been, from the Bible, three elements to Lent, and therefore to Ash Wednesday: prayer, almsgiving, and fasting. All three have to go together. Each in isolation doesn't make as much sense, Christian sense, as it does with the others. And what they do, there are ways of asking, how do I stand with God? Prayer. How do I relate to my neighbour, particularly when he or she is in need? Almsgiving. And how do I regard myself? Fasting. So these are three ways of asking questions of ourselves, but not just in the head, but involving all of us in prayer, giving to the poor, and fasting. And in his message this year, Pope Benedict has chosen to emphasize one of the three elements, almsgiving, although, of course, he takes for granted, and perhaps in other years he'll reflect on it, more intense prayer that goes with Ash Wednesday and Lent, and the practice of fasting. But this year he's chosen concentrate on almsgiving. And as always, what he says is very biblical, full of quotations from the scriptures, and also very alert to how the Bible has been lived out by Christians, what we call tradition. And I think two things struck me. One was when he said that giving to the poor is a matter of justice before it's a matter of charity. In other words, it would be a failing not to give to the poor. It's not an extra, especially good people might do, but we owe it as a matter of justice to the poor. That's one element, which is rather striking. And the other, which of course ties in with his first encyclical, is that in almsgiving during Lent, but all the year round, we don't just wish well to others, philanthropy, as he calls it, but it's an act of charity in the strict sense of something which unites us to God and neighbour, and it's the highest form of Christian love. I think those two elements he's chosen, I think, are profound and very relevant.
One thing that struck me was he said that the things that we possess are not ours, the worldly goods that we possess. And, you know, that's pretty tough stuff for somebody who works, you know, 10 hours a day, 8 hours a day to make a living, puts money aside, sends the kids to school, wants a beautiful house, wants a nice car. You know, that's not an easy message to get across today.
No. I think perhaps this takes us back to the need to pray, because left to ourselves, I don't think we're capable of very much, and certainly not of heroism in virtue. But I think each person in his or her life would have to So we have a scale of duties. The example you gave is someone's married and works and is a parent. Then, of course, it would be unjust to deprive all the members of his or her family of certain things. It's really, there's no formula, there's no percentage, although traditionally people always spoke about tithes given to the church. Put it this way, whatever one has, one should ask, at what point, without neglecting the duties I already have, am I being called to be first just? As you say, it's a very striking phrase, and I think Pope Paul VI used to mention it a lot, how for Christians, there's no absolute ownership. It's always on trust, or if you like, with a social mortgage, which means one has to ask questions all the time, examine one's conscience, and there's no standard formula for how much one should give. So much varies with each life, but the pressure of a question must remain.
That was Dominican Father Robert Ombres speaking to my colleague Tracy McClure. Jesuit Father Jerry O'Collins is the former Professor of Theology at the Pontifical Gregorian University and author or co-author of more than 40 books, his latest being called Jesus Our Redeemer. He explains why we are all Ash Wednesday people.
Years ago, I met a man who told me that he knew only one thing about Christians. It was something two of his friends at work did once a year. They both go off together at lunch hour, he told me, and when they come back, they have a little ash on their foreheads. What his friends did once a year was to go into a church on Ash Wednesday and receive the ashes. A priest will sprinkle a little ash on their foreheads and say the words, "Remember, you are dust, and unto dust you will return." Ash on our foreheads shows us what we are, people of dust and destined to die. Dust stands for death and for things breaking up. Dust is not like the beautiful rocks we can dig up in the mountains or the lovely seashells we find along the shore. One speck of dust is just like another. It doesn't belong anywhere. It's barely visible and noticeable. In a way, we're all like that, mortal human beings heading towards death. Our lives can even seem pointless and meaningless, like dust about to be blown away. An Arab friend once said to me, "Our lives begin as a drop of seed sown in desire and end as a handful of dust." Thinking that way about the start of life is perhaps a good reminder of how fragile we really are. Why am I here at all? My mother and father need never have met. Circumstances could so easily have been different and never brought them together. 6 years into their marriage, without going into the biological details, another human being could have emerged to take a place in the world. But that new person would not have been me. I need never have existed. We're all Ash Wednesday people. We exist between a drop of seed sown in desire and our end, when we will become a handful of dust. Probably this is the last thing any of us want to be told on a fine Sunday evening. I can just hear my sister-in-law saying, "Jerry, would you please be cheerful and say something positive?" Now, I'm all for being positive. God is extremely cheerful and very positive too. But God is also realistic. We too must be realistic and come to terms with what we are. Death is as important as birth. But we're not just little piles of dust to be blown away finally on the wind. We are much, much more than that, because God loves each one of us and loves us with an infinite and faithful love.
That was Jesuit Father Jerry O'Collins. As we heard earlier, Pope Benedict chose to focus on why it is so important for Christians to give alms to the poor in his Lenten message this year. And in the following two reports, we hear how Catholic aid organisations are putting that message into practice. The USA is the world's richest country, yet some of its citizens are going to bed hungry at times because they can't afford to feed themselves adequately. This is the paradox that many Americans might find difficult to believe. But, as I've been finding out, there is a worrying growth in the number of hungry people living in this land of plenty.
Food, glorious food! We're anxious to try it. Three banquets a day, our favourite diet.
Hungry street urchins were commonplace in the West during the 19th century, when the British author Charles Dickens wrote Oliver Twist. But most people now would believe that in the world's wealthier nations at least, hunger is a thing of the past. But that's not the case. It may take different forms, but hunger and food insecurity is a current-day problem that dogs many people living in the US, and it appears to be getting worse. Food insecurity is defined as not always having access to enough food to meet basic needs. And the statistics show that over 35 million people in the US live in homes marked by food insecurity. In addition, reports from around the nation show that requests for emergency food aid have risen by over 10% in the past few years. So what is causing so many people to fall into the hunger trap in the US? A question I put to Kathy Curin of the US Catholic Campaign for Human Development.
Well, it's hard to pin down exactly why, but there are many factors. One is persistent unemployment or underemployment. That factor is frequently cited by the people who visit the food banks. Either they can't find a job or they have a job that doesn't give them enough hours or pay them enough wages. Other problems include the other kinds of costs that families have to incur, whether it's housing costs, and housing costs are very expensive in many parts of the United States, costs for health care, if they don't have insurance or of their own private insurance, or if they make a little bit too much money for the federal Medicaid health care program. So they're completely on their own for their health care costs. That can really eat away at a family's income. Single working moms, for example, are going to have high child care costs, so that's another bite at the income of the family. Utility costs, transportation costs, for low-income families operating just around the level poverty levels, all of these costs are of the household are things that take money away from their ability to buy food.
Although food insecurity is a more common problem than actual hunger, there is a significant segment of people that sometimes cannot afford to put enough food on the table for them and their families.
Of those 12% of households that are food insecure, about a third of those are considered to be food insecure with hunger. So in those households, you do have an instance, not every week or every night, but you do have people who one or two or three or four or more times a year will find themselves basically going to bed hungry at night. And we know that about 10 million people live in the subset of those households that are food insecure with hunger.
It seems incredible, as you say, though, that in the world's richest country, there is this underbelly of hunger.
I think it's definitely a challenge to us in the United States to continue to address the problems that create situations that people find themselves facing hunger. We need to do more to address problems of unemployment. We need to do more to make sure that people who do work have living wages that, on which they can sustain their families.
Fairfield in Connecticut is the U.S.'s richest county. But even here, there are people that are sometimes going without enough to eat. One person who has seen at first hand the plight of such people is Al Barber, who is director of Catholic Charities in Fairfield that runs two soup kitchens to help feed the needy.
It's surprisingly serious. We have the wealthiest county in the United States, a tough place to be poor, and we serve in excess of 600,000 meals a year, which is up every year by 10 to 12%.
Why is it going up?
for two reasons. One is that there is just a growing group of working poor, chronically ill, people who need the help and learn about us and know that we will take care of them. And then there's a growing immigrant population that is trying to make life better for themselves, and they forego food and come to us.
But is there any shame attached to the concept of having to go to a soup kitchen to get fed? No way, says Al.
When people are hungry, I don't think pride gets in the way of their willingness to come to us. A brief story: I have a very well-dressed individual at one of our soup kitchens who greeted me when I was there one day, was very pleased we were able to help him, and over the holidays gave us $100 because he'd eaten at the soup kitchen so many times. So it is a balanced, our guests, as we like to call them, have a great deal of pride in what they do, but realize this is something they need for some period of time.
Al says many people in Fairfield are not even aware of these hidden pockets of hunger in their affluent county.
Many are initially incredulous. Many do not see it. They don't necessarily understand it. But as soon as it's brought to light, as soon as they visit a soup kitchen or a food pantry, as soon as we give them the statistics behind it and why it is what it is, they are very generous and very helpful. As I said, the 500 to 600 volunteers who are in our operations on a regular basis and have done it for years certainly get an awful lot out of it. So by participating in the process, whether it be by giving food or giving a cash donation or volunteering, there's much to be received.
The immense gratitude of those receiving the meals at the soup kitchens is a tonic for them all.
This is one of the great blessings of my job. I came out of the corporate world. I worked for General Electric for 30 years. And doing this for the last 2 years, I've gotten great satisfaction out of meeting many of our clients. They often have a big smile on their face, thank us profusely for what they do, engage us in conversation about their lives. Rarely, if ever, do they do anything but thank us, thank the Lord, feel that they are blessed in this situation.
In his first encyclical, Deus Caritas Est, Pope Benedict stressed the importance of charity, and Al says this document has had a strong impact on their work.
Well, it's interesting because Bishop Laurie, in talking about the encyclical, said it was the charter for Catholic Charities, and everything that Catholic Charities does is service-based for the needy, for the less fortunate, for those who just need a hand in some way, and it can be counseling or it could be food or housing. And the response of the Catholic laity, the response of churches of all kinds and individuals, regardless of their faith, has been outstanding. We can always do more. In our senior nutrition program, we only reach about 3% of the population that needs help, but we're still the largest out there. So more to be done, but the generosity of all of the people, whether it be the church and the bishop or the lay people, is very, very, very heartwarming.
Donning an apron to serve food to the hungry at their soup kitchens is a job that Al and the local bishop have both done. And, as he tells us, it was a joyful and uplifting experience.
The bishop and I actually had a wonderful experience around the holidays. We went by to visit one of our soup kitchens, and we tried to visit all of our operations during the year. And when we got into the soup kitchen, they were light on volunteers, and they threw aprons on us, and we served the entire meal. And the reaction of the people was extraordinary. But one particular moment was humorous and just brought the day to light. We were serving hamburgers and carrots and French fries. And the bishop was serving the carrots. And people came by and thanked him. And he went to put carrots on a fellow's plate who said, "No, thank you, Your Excellency. I don't eat carrots." And the bishop said, "Neither do I. I really don't like them." And everybody got a chuckle out of that. So in the sadness and the difficulty of some of our operations is humor and is really kind of that uplifting spirit that is so crucial to the needy and vulnerable of the world.
Those of us who are more fortunate can all gain so much from helping those in need. And that's an important message that Al cannot stress enough.
I have never been to a soup kitchen where there weren't a tremendous mix of people, all of whom really did need and enjoy what was happening there. And it changes, the faces change every day. And as I've said many times, what you see there are the faces of Jesus. When they are fed, when these people are fed, it is clear that they, by their actions or their words, are very touched by it and very thankful. We who help can appreciate what we have to a much greater degree because of our ability to do this for them.
That was Al Barber, Director of Catholic Charities in Fairfield, Connecticut. And you also heard earlier the voice of Kathy Curin of the U.S. Catholic Campaign for Human Development. Moving now to the UK, the Catholic Aid and Development Agency, CAFOD, has organised a number of Lenten fundraising initiatives. Tom O'Connor is CAFOD's Director of Communities and Supporters, and he spoke to my colleague, Will Taylor.
Well, basically, in England and Wales, the Catholic community have celebrated Lent Fast Day for almost 50 years now. It'll be our 50th anniversary in 2010. And we're very fortunate because, as an agency, we work on behalf of the Catholic community across England and Wales. And really, the collection that we have is a way of putting into practical action what we're reflecting upon as Catholics at the beginning of the season of Lent. So that would really sum it up. So for most people, it's not just about giving to a charity. It's actually about doing something practical as an expression of their Catholic faith. And that's what we do for Lent Fast Day.
Pope Benedict's Lenten message for this year focuses on the importance of Christians giving alms to the poor. Mm. How do you feel about this choice of theme, and do you hope his message strikes a strong chord and perhaps will boost the amount of money you'll be able to raise?
I think it's absolutely fantastic that the Pope has written this letter. In fact, I was just reading it again the other day, and it sums up exactly what it is that we're trying to do with Lent Fast Day, and it's so encouraging and energising, actually, that the Pope is focusing on this. I mean, there's one phrase he's got in there which really strikes a chord, and in fact, when I'll be speaking at Mass on Sunday, it's something I'd really want to draw out, and he talks about inward cleansing being accompanied by a gesture of ecclesial communion. And that's exactly it. We're talking about making a new start for Lent, really reflecting on our inner lives, and then as a member of the church, doing something public to recognise our brothers and sisters who are in need and our responsibility towards them. So what the Pope has done there is absolutely fantastic, and it's a huge encouragement to us in the work that we're trying to do.
That was Tom O'Connor from CAFOD speaking to my colleague Will Taylor. That's all from us here at the English programme for today, but we hope you have enjoyed listening to us. We'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. And don't forget, you can always find our programmes at the click of a mouse on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.